Welcome to Milkmaids Podcast, the unconventional homesteading podcast. I'm Stephanie from Wyoming.
And I'm Tara from Montana. Join us each week as we take a deep dive into an inclusive homesteading topic from canning, dairy animals, gardening, animal husbandry, and everything in between.
Hey, Tara.
Milkmaids at night.
After dark.
It really is getting really dusky. Is that a word? Dusky? Oh, good. And your baby, he's going to make all the sounds.
he's here. Our almost silent co-host.
Yeah.
Right.
He's actually in charge of us. He's the producer.
If that is not the truth, yes, he's in charge of everything.
Baby producer.
Infants rule the world, in case anybody didn't know.
It's all around their schedule.
Yeah, he's in charge. Luckily, he's a pretty agreeable leader, but he's here nonetheless, so... Anyways, ask me.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering. Okay, who's our shout out this week, Steph?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Tara.
Because you told me to.
Right. I have to, Aries. Our shout out this week goes to Wild Coast Brew. I'm super excited about these people. Mike has a really neat story starting out as a farmer and a chef who created really unique farm and forest to table experiences for our customers, which we hear all the time about, like, farm to table this, farm to table that.
But what I does never it really thought mean?
About. Well, I never thought about like a farm or a forest to table.
Yeah.
Like foraging meals.
It totally makes sense, though.
Yeah, it's way cool. Super cool. So, anyhow, her and her partner Dan settled at Myrtle Glen Farm in 2014. And they've done a number of things, but creating teas turned out to be their passion.
Ah. And I see why you found this place then.
There's like tenfold, really. Like on any of these points, you're going to be like, oh, okay. That makes sense. Oh, okay. So, kind of the reason that they are worked into our podcast, though, as opposed to I just happen to like them, is that much of their ingredients for their teas are either grown sustainably on their own farm or ethically foraged along the southern Oregon coast, which I think why this is like such a cool thing to me is that as farmers, we think about farming all sorts of things, right?
Yeah.
Broccoli, kale, right? That's obviously a farmer. You don't think about someone foraging or farming a beverage. And
right,
I think that's why this is so cool to me.
Yeah.
It's just something I never thought about before. Anyhow, so they have three main guiding principles for their company that we think are just great. First is wild creativity and experimentation. And they really let their hearts work through their creations of these wonderful teas. Secondly, they have a strong focus on sustainability. And this is seen in the ingredients that they forage, grow, and use, as well as in their packaging. The teas are held in a plant-based compostable bags, and the tube that holds the bag of teas are made from recycled papers. And the artwork that are on these tubes makes them impossible not to want to reuse them after consuming the tea. Seriously, they are like stunning. They're beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome.
And lastly, they have a strong sense of collaboration, activism, and community as well.
Yes.
And then back to the packaging. And the artwork really quick. So all of the artwork, they partner with a local artist to them. So by buying their teas, you're actually doing a 2-for-1. Supporting 2-for-1. Artists, local artists, and local farmers.
That's exciting, too, like, for the people who are artists there, because
a
lot of the time, a local artist is underappreciated.
Yeah. Most of the time, I would say.
Most of the time,
art's a hard thing, I think.
It is.
So the tubes that these teas are sold in have an animal depicted on them that lives in the southern Oregon coast area. And the teas inside the tubes are crafted in consideration to what the animal means in its environment and also its interaction with humans and also throughout history.
Damn. Like,
when you read their about to on about to?
About us?
Yeah.
Their about section?
Not how to. About to.
Again, milkmaids at night.
After dark. I got to stop saying that.
You just like to say after dark.
It's funny to me.
It sounds like we have a sexy show.
That's
really
what I'm saying.
We're
it's totally inappropriate.
Right? We're talking about poop.
Poop today. Back to the teas. If you read on their website, the way that they describe how they create these teas and the inspiration that they take from the environment around them, it's just really beautiful. So you can find them at wildcoastbrew.com. And even if you don't like tea or whatever, I don't know, just whatever you do, just go look at the packaging, if nothing else, because the artwork is stunning.
Stephanie's birthday's coming up tomorrow, actually, but it'll be
it is
a couple days before this podcast. I'm like pointing my thumb.
You are in the past, which is directly behind your back, about three thumb wags.
Well, do you see, like, in your mind when you're envisioning your week, do you see, like, the days ahead of you?
I do it left to right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so am I.
Right.
Left to right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. Happy birthday, Stephanie.
Hey, thanks.
If you want to ask us a question, you can reach out to us on Instagram or email us at milkmaidspodcast@gmail.com. Please leave a review on iTunes. And we are always looking for shout outs. I do believe we just got one recently that we have to work in. It'll probably be in our next episode. And if you'd like anyone to be featured, yeah, just let us know. You can also get a hold of us on Facebooks, on the Facebook singular at Milkmaids Podcast. And don't forget to join our Milkmaid Podcast Listeners Club on Facebook. There are questions to get in. Just answer that so we know you're not a Russian spy.
That's how we're telling these days.
I don't know if it helps, but...
Oh my gosh.
Have you seen, I guess, in the news, impromptu in the news, Belarus is siding with Russia, which is very bad, and they're being sanctioned, but they are... the number one distributor for fertilizer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it is affecting literally the entire world because...
I knew the wheat was going to be a problem, but I hadn't heard that deal about Belarus.
Yeah, Belarus, they have the most fertilizer that is exported.
Cool.
And so this is affecting American farmers because most of it is imported into America. And so fertilizer now, the same amount used to be like $400 per whatever ton or something. It's now $1,400 per whatever.
Whatever unit. Good golly. Mm-hmm.
So, and also there is a shortage. Like, nobody's able to get it, really, if you could afford it.
Right.
So, it's just kind of scary because it's affecting everyone. And as Americans, I know that my thought is like, oh, I have to take care of my family. Like, we have to secure our food, whatever. It's not going to affect us like it's going to poorer countries.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's kind of sad to think of, like, what... might happen.
Yeah, the whole thing is such a mess.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just like that butterfly effect. Like, this all affects everyone. So
yeah.
Keep Ukraine in your thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been obsessed with just watching. And I do the stories of heroism that are coming out of this are really incredible. And I try and focus on that.
Yeah.
As
it's hard.
To just how awful the whole situation is.
Right.
Anyways. They didn't come here for our take on the world.
No, but...
they came here for poop.
or still have to talk about what happened on your farm because it's been a long-ass time.
I just want to talk about shit.
We're just so excited to talk about... what did you call it? After dark? After dark poop?
Poop after dark. It's getting worse.
After dark.
It's getting worse. What happened on my farm? We have baby goats.
Yes.
Okay, we haven't talked about that yet.
No, none of them.
None of them. So yeah, we've got baby goats. It's the first round was a disaster. I learned I don't think my particular goats are cut out for, or at least that. Here's the thing. I don't even want to blame her because she like stood and
it was it was triplets.
Triplets. And I am like just overwhelmed all the time with my children and house and schedule and everything else. And we're focused so heavily in the cow milk right now because we're not farming for profit. And the goat's milk was like a serious cornerstone of that business.
Yeah.
And we bred them thinking we were still moving forward. Anyways, long and the short of this whole thing is right now we do not need goat's milk. We don't really even need baby goats, but that's where we're at. So I thought I had the brilliant idea that I don't need the milk. I'll just dam raise them this year. If my does will take them, right? Because I've always pulled because I do goat dairy, right? So anyways, this mom, she's like fantastic. She licked them all clean. If I had to bug with her, she stood like a rock. Those babies would get up and start nursing. She'd move her, or trying to nurse, she'd move her leg back to give them good access. She stood, like it wasn't like she was doing like new mom stuff or... she wasn't rejecting them. She did her part. And potentially this could just flat out come down to the fact that they were triplets and I had two that were not that viable.
Right.
But anyhow, we lost two out of the three. which my initial knee-jerk reaction, I'm always, and I think this goes back to just like kind of who I am as a person as far as my controlling, and I'm very hard on myself about everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anytime anything goes wrong, my first instinct is, what did I do and what could have I done?
Right.
As opposed to, well, that animal was just weak and it was going to die. My first thing is, I should have done this and I could have done that. So my first instinct is that the thing that I changed from last year, because not to toot my own horn, I've never lost one.
No.
The only baby goats that I've lost have been one, like we had one, well, the same goat had triplets a couple years ago. And one of them was like very obviously a stillborn.
Yeah.
Right. But it's all been examples like that where it was like out of your control. So anyhow,
you have a buck left from that one.
Yeah. One buck left from that one. And the other two passed. And then we had another set of triplets.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Weird. Yeah. Another set of triplets. And this one, we only had two alive out of the three.
Yeah.
And the one that died was like looked from the outside perfectly fine. Obviously, yeah. Something happened. And it wasn't the first one either. Because if it was the first one, I could have said, well, maybe it got stuck in the birth canal too long and
yeah.
She had to clear it. But she had the first one, and then it was actually the second one that was born.
That was stillborn,
yeah. So yeah. Anyways, that just happens sometimes. And then so then she had two girls, and one's very big and strong, and the other one's littler, but she's very strong as well, and they're all doing great. So
oh, good.
Now they're all together. They're not quite ready to do the hands-off bottle nursing thing. We made a bottle rack. The older one, the buckling, he was doing it fine. So
yeah.
When we put the little girls in there.
He's like, I'm a baby.
Yeah, now we have to go backwards. But that's going well. I have, in theory, two more. One is very, very obviously bred. She is.
Wait, you have two more goats to have babies?
Mm-hmm.
Why? What? I thought you only had three milk goats.
I have four.
Oh, well, I'm the worst friend ever.
I bought Nike since you've been here last.
Okay.
But I bought her last spring.
Okay. So you have two left to not calve.
Kid.
To kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two left.
So
we're just waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting because I did not mark their birth date or their due dates this year because I just put the buck in.
Do they look close?
Nike is the size of a house and she's been uncomfortably pregnant for a week now. I thought she was going to go before Poppy for a little while.
Yeah.
But then Poppy's milk came in her bag really. And I was like, okay, never mind. Poppy's going first.
Yeah.
But Nike and Gracie's milk supply is about tied. It's just, you can tell there's milk there, but there's no tension in the bag whatsoever.
Okay.
Nike is the size of a house and Gracie's just slightly bigger.
Right. Whoa.
Bless you. So anyways, we'll see what happens there. It's funny that Tara and I were talking about the weather today, but
yeah,
Tara's like, it's cold. And I'm like, it's a heat wave. So, we did a bunch of barn cleaning today.
Yeah.
Which is good. You'll be happy to know, Tara, because you're planning a trip out here. We did clean the goat barn. So I won't make you do that this year.
We enjoyed it. We had fun doing it.
Poor Tara came to my house last year and I'm like, yeah, so everybody get a pitchfork.
And we're cleaning the barn. Yeah. No, just another day.
Right. But anyway, so we worked outside, got the whole aisleway cleaned off and all of that. I'm starting seeds this coming week, tomatoes and peppers. I'm skipping Brussels sprouts. So we'll see what else I start. But
yeah.
Finally starting that. We plumbed our seed rack downstairs. Did I even tell you this?
Yes.
We plumbed water to it.
You didn't tell the podcast.
Okay. No. I did tell you. So yeah, we plumbed water, like a hard line of water over to where we start our seeds. So now I have one of those coily hoses with an on and off switch. And
fancy.
Yeah. It's like always it was before that I would have to take the watering cans upstairs, fill them up and bring them back down. And you have to do that five or six times with two watering cans when you're in full season. So,
and then now you have two children.
And not two. And one who says, Amicum?
Right.
And so then you've got to help her up and down the stairs every single time. You got to run water cans.
2 hours later.
Right. 2 hours later. Yeah. So anyways, that was pretty exciting. We got that done. What else? We've been building. We do a lot of things around here. Yeah, we have been building beehives, getting ready for that because they arrive on April 11th.
Yes.
My chickens still aren't laying eggs. That's what
I don't know what happened to your chickens.
I don't know what happened to my chickens either. If you want eggs when you visit me, BYOE.
Bring your own egg.
I have none.
Well, I have lots. None. They've been going to the pigs, though.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We have that much. I would rather eat my own shoes than deal with people on like Facebook Marketplace to sell eggs.
For $3 eggs? No.
No. And then they're like, well, can you meet me here? And you're like, ma'am, that's 2-hour drive for me. Well,
or if can you meet me here? Them. Yeah, sure. I'll be there tomorrow. Sounds great.
No show.
And then you sit there for 45 minutes and they're like, oh yeah, I had a headache.
The amount, are you speaking specifically yes. to my? That really happened to me.
Yes. I'm retelling your stories.
It was with soap. And I was like, I would rather eat this entire bar of soap than have to deal with this anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I hate selling things on that. If I can mail it, that's fabulous. Fine. Because
right.
shipping is paid. Good. It's
out of my hands. Yeah.
It's out of my hands. I don't have to sit and wait for you.
Right.
With 3 children in tow.
Right. Right. Furthermore. How are you doing? What's going on your farm?
I sold 6 pigs today, piglets, but these are not my best piglets per se. Just it's been a weird February, March, because there was no sun and they had a vitamin D deficiency. So I've been feeding them eggs like crazy because apparently eggs are like high in vitamin D.
Eggs are?
Yeah. I read it on Google. It's got to be right.
It's got to be.
Oh, yeah. So I sold those pigs and then we moved. The twins have pigs that they're going to show. So we're just separated those two out so they can work with them. And just train them. So the other ones we put together with the smaller piglets. And of course they fight for a little bit, but they were all good after that. And
are there boys taking pigs off of Matilda?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They took 2 of the best ones out of there.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend take 3 other ones, which was fun because I can go visit them, which I like to see or help her with whatever she needs help with. I love doing that. Yeah. So we got them moved out and then the sows got bred last week.
So are Matilda's piglets all gone then?
No, they're all here.
They're all here.
Matilda stayed. Moira's. I only have 2 left of Moira's.
Oh, okay. I get them confused.
So the everyone names does.
Are hard I know. For me. And they one of them was my pig.
Similar. I know.
I don't know. You're telling me things, I have a hard time keeping them separated so, apparently.
Yeah, the 2 smaller ones from Moira's I kept because I don't love selling runty pigs to people personally. And I think I know that I can raise them fine and grow them out, but I think that I'm going to try and sell them because I just don't need that many pigs to sell.
Right.
Because we're only going to eat 2. My mom only wants 1. So that's 3 for us. And then the 2 are for the twins. So.
Right.
I don't know what I'm going to do. If you want runty pigs in Northwest Montana, let me know.
Right.
Well. That's about it though.
Sweet.
Oh, wait. I'm panicking about my chicken brooder because my Cornish cross are supposed to be shipping this upcoming week. So
yeah.
Stephanie's like, oh, the draft will get them.
The draft, which then at one point we had a very funny miscommunication about it, a war draft.
Yeah. Stephanie thought I meant the war draft, but I meant like draft. I know. Airy draft. Like
frantically googling world news. So I think you're fine. I'm like trying to figure out how to make this concise, but they made a very nice new brooder that's like a more permanent structure.
Because we were using stock tanks before that.
Yeah. And so it's like a room inside of her barn.
Yeah.
But then the walls are kind of open is why I had said. And all I said, as I recall, is you may want to pay attention to drafts because Cornish cross can be susceptible to them. Now, I don't know that Cornish cross are any more or less susceptible to drafts than other chickens. Like you just shouldn't have drafts with chickens.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. I don't know. The internet is weird because all under the light, I have a Premier One heat lamp. And then I also have a heat plate just so they have heat.
Right.
Because it's a big area.
Yes.
And under those places is perfectly warm.
Yeah.
But not, I mean, it's not deathly cold at the water or the feed because the water's not freezing, nothing like that.
Yeah.
But it's colder. So I'm like, oh, I don't know it would be perfectly fine for layer chicks.
Yeah, you're just going to have to watch them. That's really
I can't watch them because I have to take my kids to 8,000 appointments. My one child broke his braces. So Tuesday. If they ship Monday, maybe they'll be here Tuesday or Wednesday. I have appointments Tuesday and Wednesday.
Oh.
So solve that for me. Hey, Miss Know-It-All. Miss Aries. It is Aries season, so solve my problems.
It is. Find your local... No, I'm not saying that. So you're just going to have to do the best you can. That's all you can do.
Right. That's a good way of putting it.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
They're going to be fine. I would say whenever you
get
unbox them, I would just put the food and water like almost directly under that light.
Yeah.
And don't risk it as far as like if they can, you know what I mean? Getting away from the light. Like you were saying it, you know, the water's not freezing, but it's still kind of cold. Just put it right like under there. And if you have to clean it, you do for the first day until you get the chance to be able to watch them on Thursday or whatever.
Oh yeah. That's a good idea.
You know?
Yeah. See, I knew the Aries could solve their problems. Well,
you're
going
to be fine. Like I think I understand why you're worried about this, but I also know your observation tendencies when it comes to animals and you're going to be fine.
That's a nice way to say I'm neurotic.
Well, no, it's just, you don't miss things. You observe the behavior and then you problem solve. Like you're good at that. This is not your first time. You'll be able to notice if there's a problem with any of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. So.
Yeah. Have confidence in that.
Speaking of problems, what are we talking about today? Because people are tired of hearing about my problems.
We've been trying to get to the poop for the whole time here.
What's funny is I'm always like to my twins, I'm like, please stop talking about poop all day. And now look at us, adults, while my kid's in bed.
It's all we do.
Talk about poop.
This is a great piggybacking episode off of last week. And I like alluded to it, but I didn't want to commit to it because who knows with us.
I really tried to give us a break from parasites.
Right.
But I started on an outline. I literally wrote the title and that's it. And Stephanie was like, this is not happening. So she took over.
Well, the original plan was I thought that you were going to do that outline and I was going to do this one and then we'd have two banked.
Nope.
Instead, we ended up with this one. So it is where we're at. I think it piggybacks nicely. So everyone's refreshed on the parasite episode from last week.
If you haven't listened to it.
Yeah, or if you're listening to this way later in the timeline, it's just the episode right before. Yeah, which is our first bullet point. Done. So we're not going to... Did we say what we're doing? No.
We're talking about fecal testing.
Fecal testing. That's the punchline.
We finally got to it. 28 minutes in. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Leave us a review.
A Stephanie written outline. I don't know what is. She took how long to tell us the point of that?
She's like, well, let me go back.
Right. So anyways, we're not going to cover all the nitty gritty details of parasites and how they work or life cycles or any of that. So just listen to the episode before. This also could be a standalone episode too. So you don't necessarily have to halt the brakes and go back.
But please know that we know about life cycles of parasites and you should too.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing to know.
Yeah.
So our sources, we normally just include the sources like at the end or like say and pepper them in through the episode and then have our show notes. But this one requires a special introduction. So people tend to get overwhelmed with lab type things like this. And the visual component is a great bridging in that gap, right? And we simply on our podcast, audio podcast, cannot provide you with a visual component.
Unfortunately. So,
yeah. I mean, next time I run a fecal, I'll try and do like the Instagram stories or whatever that we've done in the past, but don't wait on me because I never have anything together. The University of Rhode Island, though, has a video posted on YouTube that's every single step all the way through. It's like an hour and 11 minutes long, but that means it's that thorough, which is really good. So we have it linked in the show notes, but we highly recommend that you check that out too. If you're still intimidated at all after this podcast episode, or even if you're not intimidated, sometimes, like I said, the visual is just nice. I mean, I even have a biology degree and experience with microscopes and stuff like that. And I still wanted visuals when I started doing fecal tests to start it. So they also have a video, speaking of microscopes, on microscopes themselves and the different components of microscopes and how they work. It's the same lady. We'll have that one linked as well too, but they're really well done is all I need to tell you guys. The other two sources that we are going to talk about in this episode Those of you who know us and are fans of the podcast will know that we are obsessed with Giannakis Caldwell.
Caldwell. We finally figured out how to say her name correctly.
I feel like if I ever got served with like a cease and desist, it would be from her.
She's like, please leave me alone.
Please leave me out of this nonsense of whatever it is you guys think you're doing.
Our savior, Giannakis Caldwell.
Right? We love you. She also has an amazing book for goats called The Holistic Goat Care, a comprehensive guide to raising healthy animals, preventing common ailments, and troubleshooting problems. And in this book, there's a step-by-step guide that's super well done. The other written source that we refer to is Fiasco Farms. And if you're a goat owner and have not checked this website out yet, please go do it.
The amount of the name.
Yeah, that was great. And this lady, her name is Molly. She has, I mean, like textbooks worth of invaluable information about goats on there that's just free on her website. Does all of that out of the kindness of her heart, but she does have donation buttons that it's like Wikipedia. If you use the information, you should donate. Anyways, she's not a business, so it's just her. So indifferent from Wikipedia. But anyways, consider donating to her because she's got a gazillion amazing resources, not just about fecal testing. But her fecal guide is great because it also includes photos of the eggs and the parasites that you're probably going to run into. And that's a huge component of running a fecal. She does her fecals just a little bit different than how we're going to talk about it. But there's just more than one way to do these things most of the time. So the one thing we're going to repeat from last week, and then we'll leave it alone, is that there is immense value in testing versus just blindly deworming. And again, blindly deworming is what's leading us to resistance. And if the resistance continues, we're not going to have any dewormers that are effective and we'll lose a ton of livestock sort of unnecessarily. So testing can be done to help slow that down and you get better treatment results because you'll be knowing exactly what you're treating and which dewormers you need to be picking, et cetera. So right off the top, if you aren't sciencey and don't care to do testing yourself, fine, so be it. There's several options to get the testing done. Most, if not all, veterinarians will do fecal testing for you. Some of them do the testing in-house, and then some of them send them off to a lab. And even if you have only a small animal vet near you, most of them are still either happy to do the fecal test in-house or send them off to a lab.
Yeah, I've had to do that before with a small animal vet, and they were more than happy to do it because it's not like it only applies to large animal vets. It's every vet needs to know how to identify parasites. Yes.
No, absolutely. And those small animal vets are sending off labs each and every day.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard for them to include your sample as well. If you don't have a vet near you or if you don't have one that's willing to help you out, you can always just send off to a lab by yourself. Just Google veterinary labs near me. They usually have like test lists and test prices and how to collect the samples and how to send them right there on their website. They make it pretty simple for you. If you don't, they're usually more than happy to tell you over the phone, or like if they don't have those resources, they're happy to talk. Like,
Always.
Both you and I have had to call them before.
Yeah.
Just different labs and be like, okay, so I'm sorry, I've never done this before. How do I send this in? And they want you to do it right. So, cause then it makes their systems easier too. So they're happy to help you with that. I guess I'm saying that because for me at different points in my life, I've not done something because I've been intimidated to communicate.
Oh, totally. Right. Yeah.
So anyways, it's easier than you think. So, and getting a fecal test done by a lab or a vet usually isn't that expensive. It's anywhere from like, I've seen them as low as $3 or $4 to like $20 at the absolute worst. Most commonly, they're probably $10 to $15 usually.
That's about right.
Two ways to get this cost down if you have a large herd is either to do sample herd testing or to do the tests yourselves. So to do a sample herd test, you're just going to like select a few of the animals that you suspect would be at the most risk. That's one way. Those who aren't thriving or those that are older. And if they have worms, then they all do likely.
Yeah.
If they don't, then your herd's probably clean. The other way to do it is you can collect several fecal samples and then mix them all into one fecal sample.
That's how I've done it.
Kind of doing the law of averages. That's another way to do a herd testing too. Doing tests on farm though is really quite cost effective, and it also gives you full control and knowledge of as many details as you would like. So you can test, do a treatment, and just know 100% what's happening. And it may seem like a lot to take on, but after you've done one or seen it done once, it's really not that hard. You can do a fecal float test in two main ways. There's some other things out there, but we're going to talk about what's called the McMaster test. And just because I feel like it's a little bit more user-friendly, although the standard way is very doable as well. And that's just using a standard microscope.
It's a fancy microscope.
Right. Microscope slide and cover slip, whereas the McMaster test is a little plastic slide that's already set up for you. So
here's the equipment you'll need to do this. A microscope 40X would be ideal, and you can find these at garage sales or used online, thrift sales, etc., or call the local high school and see if they have any that they don't need. Students use them all the time, and they are constantly bought for one class and then just passed on. One with a mechanical stage is highly preferable but not required, and this makes it easier to do the counting. And Steph is going to include a link to her microscope in the show notes. You're going to want disposable gloves for the obvious reasons. Popsicle sticks, not for the obvious reasons. A scale that can measure in grams. And these are seriously so cheap. If you do not have a scale, please get one, because they're awesome to have for literally all the things.
Yeah.
And then a 30 milliliter syringe, a small bowl, 1 cc syringe or dropper, and a small fine mesh sieve or tea strainer. So a McMaster slide. These are a branded type of microscope slide used specifically for fecal float tests. And we will have a link to these in our show notes as well. All it is a plastic slide with a pocket of sorts that you put the fecal solution into. On the top of the slide, there is a printed grid. And so the pocket helps you get the right amount, and the grid helps you with counting. And so for your fecal float solution, you can purchase this for $25 a gallon or so, or you can make your own. To make your own, you will just need Epsom salts, and then fill a clean quart jar with water halfway, add 1/4 cup Epsom salts, cover and shake, and continue adding more Epsom salts until you see salt at the bottom of the jar that will not dissolve in. Then let the jar sit overnight at room temp. The next morning, if there's no salt crystals visible, add another 1 tablespoon and shake it and let it sit. The goal here is to have the water completely saturated with salt. You do not want salt crystals present, however, because they can confuse you on the slide. So if you do have some visible, be sure not to shake the jar before testing and just pull off the top. And here's how you obtain a sample. There are two ways to obtain a sample, from the ground or straight from the source. And if you're going straight from the source, you'll also need some lubrication. You'll need to restrain the animal and then take a gloved hand, and you're going to lubricate it and lift the tail. And you can insert a couple of fingers, spread your fingers a touch to let air in, and then stimulate them to go right there in your hand. And if this doesn't work, you can scoop a little out. From here, you can just turn the glove inside out and you're good to go, because your sample is going to be contained in that glove. Sampling from the ground is less intrusive, but can be difficult in terms of knowing exactly which animal the sample came from. And it doesn't really matter if you're going to get like a bulk test from all of these animals. One trick is that the animal frequently goes poop immediately after waking up in the morning. And be out there early, wake up your animal, and have your Ziploc bags and labels ready to go. And for collecting samples off the ground, you want to be looking for the freshest sample possible. Try not to scoop up any dirt or outside contamination. Just a pinch off the top is great. And if you're not going to immediately run your samples, you want to store your samples in the fridge. You can store them in the fridge for several days without compromising the sample. These methods are perfect for collecting to send to a lab or take to your vet as well. And one note on fecal samples in general, use common sense. You are dealing with shit here. So like, use gloves, be clean. Maybe don't do these tests in your kitchen, and dispose of the samples appropriately and disinfect your workspace after. So be safe, because that can be dangerous to you as well.
So first, you're going to want to mix and smash up the sample. So if you have it in a bag or a glove, you could just smush it around like from the outside. This helps get the eggs evenly distributed and also helps to get the feces more ready to dissolve into the liquid. So set your cup, beaker, bowl, whatever it is that you have, on your scale and tear it to zero. The tear button on the scale sets the balance to zero. And after you've put the cup on it, so then you don't have to do any math. You want to weigh out 2 grams of feces. And if the feces isn't really well smushed yet, take your popsicle stick and mix it up well. Okay, so first you want to mix up and smash up the sample. So if you have the sample in a bag or a glove, you can just smush it around like from the outside. And this helps get the eggs evenly distributed through the sample. And it also helps get the feces more ready to dissolve into liquid. So now set your cup, beaker, bowl, whatever it is, whatever vessel you decided to use on your scale and tear it to zero. And in case you didn't know, the tear button on a scale sets the balance to zero after you've put the cup on it. So now you don't have to do any math. You're going to want to weigh out 2 grams. And if the feces isn't smushed really well, take your popsicle stick and mix it up well.
That's where it comes in.
That's where it comes in. So now you are going to add 28 milliliters of your float solution using your syringe. And use the popsicle stick to mix it really, really well. If you're struggling with this, let it sit for a few minutes to hydrate. Sometimes you have, if you have dry fecal matter, that'll help. And then after you've let it sit a couple of minutes, it'll stir up really easily. Now you're going to strain the mixture through a sieve or a tea strainer into a second cup. And use your popsicle stick to press out, like to press the solids against the screen to squeeze out any remaining liquid. So use your 1 milliliter syringe to collect, or dropper, whatever it is that you have, to collect up your sample liquid to fill the McMaster slide. And a quick note here is that from the time that you add the liquid, mix it up, and strain it through, it's already starting to float up the eggs. So you want to just like keep moving through the steps. You don't have to go like rapid speed by any means, but don't set this down and go answer your phone sort of situation. Just keep moving through it. So to fill the McMaster slide, you can tilt the slide away from you a bit, and that'll help the liquid go into the slide. And McMaster slides do have 2 chambers, and you're going to want to fill both. That's like a common misconception too, is to only fill one. One note here is that you want to make sure that you don't get any air bubbles in there. If you do, you're going to need to rinse it and start again. So you just want to go in with the syringe or dropper with like gentle, even pressure to fill it. Now you want to let the flotation occur inside the chamber now that they're filled. And essentially, like I was kind of saying, what's happening now, as soon as you added this float solution, is that the eggs are starting to float up. And if you let the filled slide sit for 5 minutes or so, the eggs are going to float up to the top of the chamber, which will make them much easier to see on the microscope. And now you're ready to look. So put the slide on the stage of the microscope. Make sure your light's on underneath the microscope as well. Start with your shortest lens and get your focus set there. A lot of times that's a 4X or some, if you have a good microscope, might be a 10X. But you're going to want to work your way up to a 10X. But start the lowest that you can and focus, and then work your way up to the 10X. So the 10X is a really nice degree of magnification because the view will be one grid line of the McMaster test, which makes it easier to count. So you're going to use ideally your mechanical stage, but if you need to use your hand, you can. And you're going to move the slide up and down the grid lines, like pattern off. Does that make sense? So No. You'll like look, say you start at like the top left corner of the grid. Because on top of that slide is like graph paper, right? Yeah. It's like a little grid. So say you're going to start at like quadrant A1, right? Top left.
Yeah.
Then you can go all the way down column A if you want. And then go over to column B. And then go all the way up column B. And then over and then down column C. Does that make sense? So you're just going to kind of like zigzag across it. And the grids give you a way to make sure that you're not counting multiple eggs the same egg more than once, or that you're not like haphazardly making your way around the slide, if that makes any sense. It makes plenty of sense once you've done it. It's one of those things. But if, as you go, then you're going to be looking for the parasite eggs, obviously. And if you see a lot of them, well, either way, you're going to count these eggs. That's the goal of this whole thing. If your animal has a lot, if you're noticing a lot of eggs, it can be really helpful to have like a pad of paper and a pen to do a tally. To keep track of your eggs. The other thing, like if you just had this device laying around, like a counter, a clicker counter.
Oh, Costco clicker counter.
Yeah. Like if you're looking to run fecal tests, I wouldn't go buy one of those to do a fecal test. But
if you had one because you used to work at Costco,
right.
That comes in handy. That
is what people in the labs use too. So, you know, I don't know why you would have one, but maybe you do. Maybe that's the thing. Identifying the eggs. This is like the hardest part, but this is why we're here, right? So the key to success in running a fecal test is to know what you're looking for. And this is where Fiasco Farms website can come in handy, or even just Google search image of some fecal eggs.
I wonder if you could like take a picture and then reverse image search it And then Google tells you what parasite you have.
Oh, interesting. I have no idea, but I feel like there should be an app for that, for the 12 of us who care.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're all listening.
Right. Oh my gosh. So it's one of those things, if you've seen them before, they're easy to spot. Good idea, especially if you're just starting, is to print off some examples and have them right next to your microscope there so you can look and see if you're actually identifying what you think you're identifying. Also, the University of Rhode Island video has a wonderful visual explanation of eggs and identification. Definitely worth checking that out before you start. That's at the end of the video that we'll link. So here's just like a couple things to know. Again, the visual would be the best answer here, but eggs are typically round or oval, oval probably being more common. All eggs of the same species are the exact same size. So if you think you're seeing something, but they're all over the place for this one's big, that one's small, it probably is not a parasite egg. You're probably looking at something different. Eggs usually have an outer layer and then an inner layer, very similar to a chicken egg with a yolk, for example. And the most common eggs you're going to find are strongyle eggs. The term strongyle refers to a lot of different parasites, including the barber pole worm, which we did talk about in our previous episode. These eggs are typically oval and have like a bubbly or granular looking interior to them. Sometimes the interior fills up the entire oval, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just in the center or off to one side, more like a chicken egg is.
Yeah, if you were to candle it, it were further along, that would be bigger.
Yes. Yep. And that, yeah, you're right. It just depends on the stage of life. So when you are looking at the eggs, it's fairly easy to identify a strongyle egg. Again, once you've seen one. Now, when it comes to determining what type of strongyle egg you have, you're going to need to do some more research. And the video does have some great images that can help you. Just by the nature of how these parasites are, some of them you can identify at home and some of them you just can't. That's just how it goes. And you have to, if you were like truly adamant to figure out exactly what they are, you would need to send them to a lab, and a lab would then culture the eggs. I think this is so cool. Culture the egg, hatch out the worm and be like, oh, that's what it is.
An incubator for parasites.
For parasites. Is that crazy? It's like some sort of horror Easter. What's going
on? The unfun hatchery.
What is in the egg? Right.
Tapeworms.
Tapeworms. When milkmaids host egg hunt, right?
That's disgusting.
Oh my God. So something else you might see is coccidia eggs. They're very common in manure, especially in young animals. They're also round to oval in shape, similar to the strongyle egg, but they're much, much smaller, about half the size. And they also only have a single cell inside of the egg.
Yeah,
and
because they are protozoa?
I know that, however it works out, at the stage in which they are shed into the manure, they have one single cell inside of the egg.
Yeah.
That's just how they are, right?
Yeah.
So the numbers here can be difficult to interpret. Some samples have like just loads of coccidia and some don't. It's really important here to consider the symptoms of the animal as well. Like just because your fecal sample has a lot doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do anything about it. Tapeworm eggs are something else that you might see as well. Again, these are most common in young animals, and they also break the rules in shape, as they can be triangular or square. I've never seen them in real life, but I want to because they look really cool. I don't want to, I guess, but...
Not on my animals.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe somebody else's animals.
Yeah,
just
kidding. I know. I don't even know how to word that, but they're really cool looking. The eggs are the triangle or square. They are similar in size to strongyles. The numbers in this case aren't helpful because of the way that they shed in the animal. They come out like segments of a tapeworm can do certain amount of eggs. So again, it's hard to describe. The sample can look a lot worse than it actually is. So also tapeworms don't tend to cause a lot of disease in animals. So it's less of a concern. They're just really weird looking eggs. It's one of those things just to
They're
know.
Buddies.
Yeah, that when you're looking through samples, what you may come across. Whipworms have really unique eggs that you might see as well. They're football shaped and very brown. Whereas like a strongyle is like a clear to grayish, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These guys are like really dark brown. And they have these little plugs. Polar plugs at the end, each end of them. Again, they rarely cause disease unless they were in extraordinary numbers. I've never seen those either. I've only ever seen strongyle eggs. One mix-up that people have is accidentally identifying air bubbles as eggs because they're similar. They're round and they have an open interior and a dark outline. The difference here with an air bubble is that the outline is very, very, very dark, like thick black wall. So that means you're probably looking at an air bubble. And pine pollen, too, can kind of look similar to eggs in certain circumstances.
Oh, that's so crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That would be a huge issue for me right now.
Especially this time of year, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Be sure to look up an image of this as well. They do look different, but it's one of those things that if you haven't seen one, you may think that it's a parasite. And as far as the results, what like the actual results go that we're looking at, so when it comes to tallying the results of a McMaster test anyways, you'll want to add the results from both chambers. So say you saw 3 eggs in the left chamber and 2 eggs in the right chamber, you would consider your results to be 5 eggs. Now, you're going to multiply that number by 50 to get eggs per gram. So for our example, it would be 5 times 50 equals 250 eggs per gram of manure. At the end of the day, animals will just have some parasite load to them, period. That's normal. Parasites are everywhere. They're truly unavoidable. This is where we encourage you to look at the entire animal. Don't run a test, see eggs, and freak out. That's not what you should take away from this. If your animal's presenting healthy, there's usually little need to do much else in terms of treatment. Even if you have an animal that looks and acts completely healthy but has parasites, it's like, do you bother, right?
Right.
It's just, you just have a really good animal there who's resilient. Again, just look at the whole scope of, and not only the individual animal, but the entirety of your herd. Not only like, say, my goats, but I want to look at my whole farm.
Yeah.
Goats to cows to pigs to the whole picture. You need to take that into account too before you make any sort of wild treatment plans. One animal with 200 eggs per gram may be truly struggling, whereas another animal with that same load may be thriving. So that's just something to know. The other important thing on fecal tests in general is that however you'll read, and like I said, Fiasco Farms, they do their tests just a little bit differently than what I just laid out here. There's more than one way to do these tests. The big thing here is to do them the same every time.
Yeah.
Because actual numerical value is less important as it is to what the herd looked like this last fall, or what that particular goat looked like last time we tested versus this time we tested, or on and on and on. It's more of a comparative sort of test than it is so much in actual values, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the end of that.
I have a question for you.
God.
Here's our end of the episode icebreaker. Are you ready?
Ready.
What's your favorite parasite?
It's my favorite parasite. Roundworms, obviously.
Why?
Because that was like a defining moment. Roundworms were a defining moment in my career choice. Believe it or not.
No.
I had been working for equine horse veterinarian for, I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 years at this point. Because I had just graduated college a year before, maybe. Anyhow, I had spent most of my college experience determined to go to vet school.
Yeah.
I had the grades. I was working for a veterinarian. I had the experience. I had the job experience to know that this is what I wanted to do, right? And this is a longer story as to why I decided not to be a veterinarian. But I didn't. I decided not to. At the point in this story, I was sure I was still going to be a veterinarian. And my question, which occurs to every veterinarian, is that everybody wants to work on horses and cows.
Yeah.
But you don't make any money working on horses and cows.
No.
Right? So then inevitably, everybody turns small animal, right? So
right.
I knew that this was a possibility and thought, well, maybe I want to do like a mixed animal, or maybe, you know what, maybe I'll just go out there and make my money and be done, you know, and then retire earlier, whatever, right? Like still trying to figure out exactly what to track. And the job was kick ass. Like I could take my dog with me to work, and she rode around the vet truck with us, Ellie. I got her as a puppy, and I had her for a couple days. I did not have her that long at all.
I know the story now.
She had rode around with us all day long, and I went and put her in, like, I'm getting ready to go, and I had to make a couple trips to the pickup, and where we were, it wasn't safe to just let the dog run around. So I went and put the dog in the crate in the truck and then ran back to the office to grab a couple other things. And then I was going to head off, right? I get back to the truck and Ellie is like dry heaving. And so I'm like, what in the world? So I get out of the truck, go to the back seat where she's at. And there is like a literal like Olive Garden serving size bowl of spaghetti in the bottom of this crate. And I mean, they're like whipping around, like full blown animated spaghetti. And I had never.
It's haunted spaghetti.
Horses don't vomit. I had never seen anything like that in my 5 or 6 years or 4 or 5 years, however long it was, time in vet. And I went and like, I just like backed up and I shut the door, went and got Holly. And I was like, I legit don't know what just happened. And she comes over. She's like, oh, this is why I don't work on dogs. Poor Ellie. She was so scared and so little. So anyways, we cleaned her up, but we both had a good laugh about like, yeah, this is why. Who wants to work on dogs? This is gross.
So, and that's how you got out of vet school.
So it was a defining moment in my career, honestly. Anyways.
Nasty.
How about you?
Favorite parasite? I think pig lice has to be a top. Because it's like one of the first ones. Well, no, second. Because the first one I dealt with was cocky. So, yeah, that would be the second one. And it was just like, I can't even describe to you how big pig lice is. But just I've never seen them pig lice moving like that. Just huge. It's literally like if you blew up human lice, that's what they are.
Gross.
Pig lice are just so big. Ugh. They're crazy. So.
Poor piggies.
Well, I hope you're itching now. If you're not.
We should put a disclaimer in there.
We're gross.
We talked about a bunch of nasty stuff.
Well, that was milkmaids doing a fecal test.
Next week we'll do something more
fun.
Butterflies and rainbows, I'm sure.
Sure.
Hardly.
If you know us.
Right, probably not.
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 Happy milking.
Happy milking.
Bye.
Bye.